the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, from unwanted visitors to welcomed tourists, when we think of tourists in Ireland, we probably don't think of them coming here in the early 1900s or even the 1800s. But in fact, some were. We're joined now by a man who's been immersed in the tourism industry for decades. He is here to tell us about a fascinating collection of artefacts relating to tourism in Ireland, going back as far as 1183, the McInally Collection. Professor Jim Deegan is the director of the National Centre for Tourism Policy Studies, and he's from the Department of Economics at the Kemi Business School in University of Limerick. Jim, you're very welcome to the show. We'll get to those artefacts in a moment, but first, tourism in Ireland in the 1800s, was there much of it? Who was coming?
Yeah, well, I guess what people don't often fully appreciate is that since even Imperial Rome, people were travelling for tourism, obviously just the aristocracy and the very wealthy. And up to the 16th century to the 1800s, we find the Grand Tour, where aristocracy and the gentry were travelling. So when we think about tourism, really, you know, the modern day vision, we think about the last couple of hundred, you know, last couple of hundred years, but in particular, I suppose the last 50 years.
Well, some people had some interesting and often not complimentary things to say in the past about Ireland. One of them was this guy, Cambrensis.
Yeah, Gerald of Wales, Geraldus Cambrensis, visited Ireland in the 12th century. And there's a record of this visit in Holinshed's Chronicles in the 16th century. And yeah, Cambrensis wasn't... he wrote a lot about Ireland, but he wasn't often that complimentary about us. But that wasn't unusual, in the sense what he described us as a violent, treacherous and filthy people who were wallowing in vice. Now, what's interesting about that is that a lot of the writings about Ireland would have been...
He wasn't holding back, was he?
No, he wasn't holding back. But then again, I mean, what a lot of academics talk about is this kind of... pathological othering when people visit places where they kind of see people in their own country as strangers and they kind of stereotype people. And that happens up until the 1980s in tourism.
And it's interesting about Cambrensis because it wasn't all bad, was it?
No. And I think what's given your previous speakers today, what's really fascinating is that even though he was incredibly negative, he went on to say, the only thing to which I find that these people apply a commendable industry is playing upon musical instruments in which they are incomparably more skillful than any other nation I have seen. And this guy had travelled, believe it or not, in the 12th century. I think what's also interesting is in the travel writing that grew up before we had guidebooks and official gazetteers which chronicle places, what we find is that most observers of Ireland considerably comment upon the creativity of Irish people in literature, in music, and being very innovative people, irrespective of the negative things.
And some of the other ones that would have been hits, I suppose, we would have taken in the past and what was written. There was a guy, Tom Brown.
Yeah, Tom Brown was a few hundred years after Cambrensis in the late 17th century, early 18th century. He was an essayist and a satirist. But he basically had this to say about us. Irish people, they have the cruelty of the Spanish Inquisitor, the lechery of an Italian, the levity of the Frenchman, the cowardice of a Savoyard, the perfidiousness of a Scotchman, the ignorance of a Muscovite, and the rebellious temper of a Dutchman.
I suppose what's interesting about that is he's not just stereotyping us, he's stereotyping everybody.
Well, in actual fact, that's kind of quite true. But I think that what is interesting is that to understand in tourism, this has been going on for a long time, because when we even think about Facebook or what postings people put on Instagram today, they're similar in a way to this, in the sense that people are given their own. I mean, one of the most famous ones I can think of is that when the Welsh footballer went to play football in Italy, and he wasn't going down too well, and he then was asked why, and he said, well, there's a load of foreigners here. So this kind of stuff.
You get an element of that. Yeah. What about guidebook? You mentioned there about gazetteers and What about guidebooks? When did that evolve, where people were actually writing?
First of all, the gazetteer is basically a very factual description of a place, mountains, rivers, and so on. What's interesting about gazetteers is it goes from about the 1850s onto the present day, and they describe every part, which is unusual in this collection, of 32 counties of Ireland and every small village and town. So that's the kind of factual part. The guidebook then comes after the gazetteer, where you have people who are beginning to develop a tourism industry and comment upon it. And what's very interesting about the gazetteers and the guidebooks that begin, the Murray and the Blacks guidebooks that go from the 1850s, is that if we follow them through all the volumes, we can chart how consumer culture was changing in Ireland, how places were promoting themselves over the years. So if you pick any small part of Ireland, we can find a representation of those places over a few hundred years, in very importantly, what the guidebooks were saying, but also in the advertisements that appeared, what we were saying.
And the collection is so extensive. I mean, it includes things like postcards and ephemera collected over the years as well.
I mean, what makes this collection particularly unique is that it contains what's called the ephemera. Now, until very recently in academic discourse, ephemera, which relates to leaflets, pamphlets, all the flotsam and jetsam that all of us used to collect or still do on a holiday and then throw away. What Kieran McNally saw was this was a great possibility of charting how tourism was developing, both by the public and the private sector. So what we can find is of any part of Ireland over the 32 counties, over a very long period of time, there's thousands of leaflets, brochures talking about fishing competitions and so on.
And when you look back and if you scroll on from the early guidebooks and the mid to late 1800s, not so much a golden age, but a very, important period in the development of the Irish tourism sector came sort of in the 1940s after the Second World War.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's interesting is, from my own work and other people's work, is that there's been always somewhat kind of a bit of an indifference in policy circles to the tourism sector. Now, I believe it's a post-colonial mentality where tourism is seen to be synonymous with servility. But if we look at the 1940s, we effectively had a massive tourism boom in an agricultural economy where tourism was more important in the balance of payments of the country than agriculture. This, however, was not universally welcomed. We can find records in the Dáil of politicians saying, these people are coming and they're eating our food and they're staying in the Shelburne and there's no room for us. So I think that kind of period, what's interesting about the McNally and subsequent work is that outsiders have always appeared to see the potential of tourism in Ireland. So we can find that in the Marshall Plan period, when the head of the mission to Ireland, we can find in the record where he says he was so frustrated with Ireland that if we didn't get serious about tourism, our Marshall aid would be threatened. And subsequently in the 90s, we find that it's the European Commission that's favourable to tourism more than our own policymakers.
And there are other forms of tourism that come across, religious tourism, for example.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the pilgrimages, what we find in the ephemera in the McNally is very great examples of, Mellifont Abbey, a description of Mellifont Abbey going back more than 100 years. And what's really fascinating about it is that we find all these advertisements in the religious brochures for altar wine, for clothes, for medicines. So that in itself is kind of interesting.
And when you look at the collection, what hopes do you have for the collection?
Yeah, I mean, luckily enough, we were managed to get this collection a number of years ago. But unfortunately, like most things, we need funding to roll this collection out to, first of all, to find out exactly what's in it. This is what I'm reporting on today is only a tiny amount of what I have found by going into the library. A lot of it still has to be catalogued. So we need funding basically to try and get this out. So the first thing would be to catalogue everything, which will take about 2 years. But then very importantly is to digitise everything so that every small town, village in Ireland will be able to have authentic information about its area in terms of when it's writing about, tourism development.
And when you look back on the collection and we're talking about the past, if you look forward, are there things we can learn about the future of tourism in Ireland from it and what we should be doing?
Well, I think that, your previous speaker spoke very well about, we're living a new world in tourism, in my view, where there's a paradigm shift. And we hear like the things that really matter going forward are going to be, yes, the application of AI and robotics in tourism. It's already happening. We live in an experience economy, but we also live in a world where there's labour shortages because of demographic shifts. At the same time, the industry is facing major problems because of social change that's increasing wage rates. The industry is at a crucial point because an industry that's for a long time been able to rely on surplus labour is in a situation where wage rates are rising and there's big social pressures. So I think that the industry is a productivity crisis, I would categorise it as.
So we've done well, but we still have some challenges ahead. Professor Jim Deegan of the University of Limerick, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.